It was my second Unitarian Universalist worship service ever when I leaned over to my partner and whispered, pointing at the minister, "I'm going to do that someday." She nodded and said, "That makes sense." It was not the first time that I had toyed with religious vocation, but it was the first time that all the pieces seemed to come together. See, growing up female in the Catholic Church, I did think about becoming a nun, but it never quite felt right, so I just kind of gave up that whole idea entirely. I have friends that are a part of the Women as Priests movement in Catholicism, but I'm somewhat embarrassed to say the idea never even occurred to me. It wasn't until I saw a woman leading worship, Unitarian Universalist worship, that it became clear. But then I kind of pushed the idea away. Maybe someday, I thought. A few years later, I'd been attending a church in Denver when I got a letter from the minister asking me to be a part of the worship committee. With 2 degrees in theater, it seemed like a perfect fit, especially since I'd been working a corporate job, and I was grateful for the chance to do something that was more connected to my passions and allowed me to create something of meaning and depth. A year after that, my minister invited me to attend a workshop for future leaders of the church. I was honored and excited and thankful to get to spend a whole Saturday in a church classroom, which might have been a clue. A week after that, my minister invited me to offer a reflection in the service, kind of like Walt and Amy did today. I said yes right away. After the service, 2 women came up to me and thanked me for the reflection and asked, "How far along are you in your ministerial training?" I laughed and said I was just a member just like them. They looked at each other and kind of shrugged. Around that same time, I'd been trying to leave my corporate job and thinking about what was next. But to be honest, I hadn't even thought about ministry. But when the women asked me that question, I flashed back on that impulse from that service about 8, 9 years before. A few days later, after that, I scheduled a visit to the local seminary. And a few months after that, I enrolled. In our tradition, ministry comes to us through both an external and an internal sense of call. Both are important as an affirmation of our place in the web of shared ministry. My internal sense of call started in childhood, but culminated in that moment in the Unitarian Universalist Church in Boulder. An internal sense does not always align with what you believe rationally would be a good idea. I mean, I spent a good deal of my first year of seminary pushing back on the idea that I would become a minister. Do religion and church for a living? What? Me? No, thank you. But the more I pushed, the more it became clear that it was exactly what I should be doing. So, too, there were many external voices along the way affirming a potential call to professional ministry. Most of all, those 2 women who spoke to me after the service. Without them, I may not be here today. I think of them often with so much gratitude because they could have chosen not to say anything at all. But they sought me out. They found me amongst the sea of people in social hour. They asked me about ministry, about my ministry. Too often we miss these moments to call each other to our ministries, ordained or otherwise. Too often we fail to notice or affirm or invite each other to minister. Finding that place where you are both internally and externally called, we call that process discernment. Now, discernment is a little different than just deciding because it involves a deep sense of listening, a paying attention to something that's already there, already true, but you just haven't fully seen it yet. It's like a spark that needs nurturing to grow and become and thrive. It involves a cultivation of a deep self-awareness and also humility. Sometimes in the listening, you discover that although there is an external call, the internal yes is simply not there. This is hard and confusing, but not nearly as hard and confusing as the reverse, right? When the world does not affirm the gifts that you feel you have to share. When this disconnect happens, it often awakens a sense of shame or pain that is hard to overcome. But if you can keep moving forward and keep listening deeply with humility and honesty, our tradition affirms that although it may be different than you first thought, you do have a ministry. We all have gifts. We all have a blessing to share. When these gifts come together in a community of mutual trust, commitment, and accountability, our covenantal way, only then do we even have a hope of serving those highest ideals of building together that world we dream about of justice, peace, and love. Now, in your insert today, the yellow piece right in the middle, you'll find the covenants between Sean and I that he and I made as we began our partnership, and the covenant for our staff team that we drafted this summer. These are just some examples of ministries that are being carried out in partnership. We all, together too, have our covenant affirming our partnership. Each of us with different gifts and roles serving together. One last note. After all that hemming and hawing that I did to finally give in and say yes to ministry, it was a great irony to discover that in the churches I was called to serve, there remained some who really didn't want to call what I was doing or what they were doing or what we were doing together ministry. Okay. However you name it, I am much more interested in the meaning underneath the word than the particular word itself. The meaning of ministry is to serve a greater good, the greatest good, always. Ministry is about commitment to that, steadfastness, about showing up for the long haul. Ministry is, as Gordon McKeeman said it, a quality of relationship between and among human beings that beckons forth hidden possibilities, inviting people into deeper, more constant, more reverent relationship with the world and with one another. It might include the tasks of listening, serving, teaching, preaching, singing, leading, or cleaning buildings, or giving rides, or simply saying good morning. And yet it is ultimately about any more, much more than any of these particular tasks. It is about fostering that relationship itself, the relationship with the world, with one another, and with the spirit or source of life itself, just as it is with any covenantal relationship. Through it all, our shared ministry invites us simply to keep tending to that great relationship, to unleash together courageous love, unbounded joy, unimaginable peace, and untethered hope, to keep ministering together. May it be so. Amen.
These hymns resonate with me. I chose them today because all of these represent the first that I heard or played in a Unitarian service. I was 25 years old. It's a long time ago. And I walked into Valley Unitarian Universalist Church in Chandler, not seeking a community, but seeking a place where I could keep my hand in music. I had a job that was making a lot of money, but I was not fed. So I knew I had to find something that would keep me playing music at least once a week. I had no idea what UU was about. I walked in, and the first thing that hit me was the smell of chili, cinnamon, and baby diapers. It was a shared space, you understand. It was a Montessori school, a drop-in daycare, and a church. So I kept on. I sat down at the dilapidated piano, and they had missing keys and a full-length mirror that I was looking into. with the panel behind me that was auditioning me. It was unnerving. I wanted to leave. I thought, this is not the place for me. I didn't know what to talk to my friends about. I had no rubric for telling them that I was going to church, much less going to work at one. I was 25. And the term church musician brought pictures to my mind that's not the one I'm looking at in that mirror. But we kept auditioning. It was a wonderful, wonderful panel of people. And I accepted the job and said, as long as we can get rid of this mirror, we'll do it. That was the seed. That was the surprise call. 7 years later, I was heartbroken to leave that congregation. It was a good move. We moved here. But I had fallen in love with those people. So we moved here just around the corner to Constitution Avenue. This is in 2005. Bought a house just around the corner, right across from RP and Lois Martin. Great conversations with RP. And I walked over, and I knew that this church existed because my aunt and uncle, Kim and Connie Marvel, went here. But I walked in and said, hey, if you ever need a pianist or a special musician, happy to do so, just give me a call. So David King, who was the director of music at that point, called me and said, why don't you come in and do a service a couple weeks? And I said, hey, that'd be great. Played special music, and I was walking down this ramp right here, first Sunday I've ever been in this building or met him. And he walked up and said, well, that was great. Thank you so much for your gifts. I said, no, a pleasure. I'd be happy to sub anytime. And he said, have you ever thought about being the director of music? That was awkward. Isn't that your job? But he wanted to do something else. He was not being fed, at least to the level that he wanted to be. So, fortuitous, serendipity, chance, external call. I cannot tell you what the 11 years have meant since. I think there was always an internal call. Music has been my passion, but music being my ministry, I didn't know what that meant. I had no idea what I was doing. I still sometimes don't know what I'm doing. So what does that word mean, ministry? What comes to your mind? There's this great scene in the movie City of Angels, which I love. I could watch it over and over. And that makes me a schmoopy, hopeless romantic, I realize. But it's great. Just don't tell anybody. So the woman who is the human is Meg Ryan. And she is falling in love with this angel, who is Nicolas Cage. They're sitting in a market, and she puts a piece of pear into her mouth. And he looks at her, and he says, what does that taste like? And she says, it's a pear. Don't you know what a pear tastes like? And he says, I don't know what a pear tastes like to you. I love that. So when I say the word ministry, what does that mean to you? What picture comes up? What does that conjure up from your past? What is your hope for the future? I'm guessing that they're all a little bit different. And isn't that something to celebrate? Next week, when we install your new senior minister, something that hasn't happened here in 25 years, we get to then figure out what our ministry will be, our shared ministry. So music is my passion, and music is now my ministry. And that's because of all of you. Ministers, musicians have a very private, yet are forced to be publicly vulnerable. And you have allowed me, us, to be publicly vulnerable in a safe space. So music is my passion. Music is my ministry. Thank you for your passion. And thank you for your ministry.
Years ago, I met one of the ministers in our church in Winnipeg. Rob was an older guy, was new to the congregation, and came from a working class background, which didn't exactly jive with the more middle class background of the congregation. But Rob taught me one of the most enduring lessons about ministry that I've ever received. He said to me, "Sean, do you know that the optimal distance between two chairs in worship is more than 2, but less than 4 inches apart?" I said, "No." I must have missed that. He said, "Too close together, and people will feel crowded. They won't sit next to each other. It'll rob them of each other's presence, that gift of unity. If they're too far away, the congregation will feel separate, distant, not cohesive." So each and every Sunday, Rob would arrive early to church, make his way through the sanctuary, adjusting the chairs to create that optimal distance between 2 and 4, that optimal welcoming ratio, that optimum platform for connection to take place. Now, I say that Rob was a minister in Winnipeg despite him not being ordained or being in fellowship with our Unitarian Universalist Association or even having been through seminary. His lay ministry was innate, and his congregation saw this gift and welcomed him into that role. He taught me that ministry is in part about tending to the ground that allows courageous love to take root. But most importantly, that it happens in thousands of tiny choices and moments. You may be asking yourself, well, if we're all ministers, if the service we give to the world can be ministry, if each of us is responding to the call of love and life with service and joy, what does it mean to be a capital M minister? Why do we have them? And it's a question not without merit. There are many denominations that don't. The Mormons, the Quakers, to name 2. Although it's a question I hope you don't consider too rapidly. Unitarian Universalism, the living tradition of our faith, tells us that revelation, the uncovering of truth and wisdom, is ongoing. That we ministers, unlike in some traditions, are not seen as being gifted with some sort of special revelation. Nor do we have magic powers, nor do we even have any more wisdom than you do about life. What makes us ministers with that capital M is a deep sense of calling to serve our faith as a central part of our lives, a honed set of skills and training gained from seminary and other spaces, which cultivates a giftedness for the work. But probably most importantly is the third element, the affirmation and witness of a community of Unitarian Universalists who call us into that role. Gretchen couldn't be your minister if you didn't call her to be. None of us could. In our tradition, ordinations and installations of ministers are 2 ritual moments that symbolize the thousands of moments in which a community witnesses a person's giftedness and exchanges a promise. They call each other into being, into relationship. It's a symbolic enactment of an ongoing covenant in which a community affirms the confluence of internal sense of call and an external call. To feel called to a ministry is just one element. To have a community affirm that ritually is what happens in ordinations and installations. So you may be wondering, well, what is ordination? What is that? Well, the root of the word ordination is to set in order. Ordination is not the process of elevating the ordinand, one of my favorite words, ordinand, from the people, but rather setting them into order, into relationship with the people. Affirming an enduring answer to the question, whose are we? We don't need to have professional clergy. Many churches don't. But we choose to have them, to take on a unique part of this work, a as the first among equals in this ministry, to share a disproportionate work of our collective task, but only in relationship with each other. Now, as for me, you may have noticed that I'm not ordained. You can denote this usually by the lovely stole that Gretchen is wearing and the absence of one on me. Unlike Gretchen, I am not a reverend, although I am a minister just to confuse things. What that means is I have those first two elements, that sense of call and that training. And while our relationship as your soon-to-be and currently volunteer assistant minister, through that work, we are engaging in that interplay and witness of a shared ministry, the ritualistic recognition of that in ordination, that setting in order has not occurred. For that to happen, some congregation, any congregation, would have to vote to ordain me, to say, we see in you this, and name and call you into being, to press upon me the yoke of this particular ministry and calling. I wish our society had established rituals for ordination beyond just the professional ministry. I wish families ordained their children as they set them forth into their life's calling. I wish it was normal for us to turn to one another and say, I see this gift in you. Not as just some compliment, though, and not even as some demand that they use it, but as simply a prodding of possibility towards a gift that they could give life so deeply. I wonder if, like Gretchen's experience, the fruits others see in us are the seeds of a calling laying dormant inside. What a gift to turn to each other and say, I see that in you. So I want you to take a moment. What type of minister do you feel called to be? What sort of ministry do you feel inside called to gift the world? Where does your soul find its groove in a service of greater love? It doesn't have to be big or lofty. It can be as simple and profound as the placement of chairs. And when you have that, I invite you to turn to the person beside you and just share a word or a phrase. It doesn't have to be too much. Share with them an inkling, just maybe a moment of what that calling may be. And when you hear that from the other person, I invite you to respond and say, I witness your call. Turn to each other. What is your ministry? With that exchange of witness, which is ongoing, I hereby ordain you. I anoint you. I set you in order into this, our shared ministry. You didn't know what you're signing up for in church today, but here it is. Let us be for each other witnesses and conspirators to the forces of courageous love. Let one of the answers to the question of whose our way be each other and life's. May we come back time and time again to reaffirm that in order for the gap between our highest aspirations and our current world to be pressed closer, we need each and indeed every one of our callings. Amen? Amen. Amen.